You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mowat, and joining me once again after another absence last week is Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing today?
Good to be back, Kelsey.
Yes, you're such a well-traveled man that it's hard to get a hold of you sometimes now. You're just everywhere, transversing this great, beautiful world of ours.
You know, I dropped my kid off at daycare today, and they were playing Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere, and I thought, what kind of kick-ass daycare is this? They play Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice plug there,
so,
too.
I haven't been as many places as the Man in Black, but I've been some places.
Yeah, actually, I thought when we were at the MFC a couple weekends ago, Adam Braidwood came out to one of Johnny Cash's later songs. And I told you that night, that was the best entrance music of that night, in my opinion. Good show, big show today. I know I say that every time, but this time I mean it. George St. Pierre is going to be joining us on the program. Discussing with us his upcoming fight with Matt Serra and the situation with his knee and how he's recovering from that. So that's going to be big for show. First time we've had George on the program. So
what kind of unspeakable things did you have to do to get him on the program?
That we will not discuss in a public forum.
He is big time now.
Yeah, he's not. He definitely has a lot of demands on his time. So it's always great when you can talk to him and get him for a few minutes. And then we've also got Mark Hominick coming on the program. He fought Hatsune Hyoki in last weekend's TKO. And for some people who might be getting the pay-per-view this weekend and are trying not to have any spoilers, and then you should stop listening. But Mark
not,
lost...
Not the only time we advocate stopping listening to the show.
Exactly. But Mark lost by majority decision to Hyoki, and it was somewhat controversial. There's lots of different opinions on some of the different forums and some of the different reports, Brendan. It's kind of across the board. I've read some reports that said that Hyoki probably got the win, deserved the win. It was a close decision, and him being the champion, he deserved the decision. And then I've also heard reports that said that Hominick clearly won the last three rounds, and there's no doubt in their mind. So we'll have Mark on the program to discuss that fight. And as I mentioned, it is on pay-per-view this Friday, so everyone, at least up here in Canada, it's going to be on viewer's choice, so people can watch that fight. It's from all reports, regardless of who people thought won, it sounds like it was a great five-round war, and people can watch that on pay-per-view and make up their minds for themselves.
Yes, it's interesting to see how these things are reported and reposted now. I actually set up my... I was away on the weekend, so I set up my my PVR to record the Elite XE show, which was aired over free TV here in Canada. And, of course, it cut off after 2 hours right before the Shamrock fight. So I rushed here and tried to avoid the Internet and anything on the Internet that would disclose the outcome. And I finally found it on YouTube, where some guy was video recording his television from an odd angle. And I actually watched it on some guy's television via YouTube.
Yeah, well, I definitely...
Very poor.
I definitely want to discuss that at the end of the show. There's lots of people discussing that event, so we'll talk about that. So stay tuned. You've got the UFC welterweight champion coming up next, George St. Pierre.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League's 2007 inaugural season explodes Friday, February 23rd at the arena at Gwinnett Center. See Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack. And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Enzo Gracie's Pitbull. Be there Friday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the arena at Gwinnett Center. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. Or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com.
Make it matter.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and it is our privilege to introduce George St. Pierre to the program. George, how are you doing today?
I'm all good. It's all good, my friend.
Good, George. It's been a while since I've talked to you, so it's great to have you on the show. We've had several of your training partners on the program, both Team Jackson and some of your other teammates like David Loazo, Patrick Cote, Jonathan Goulet, so it's nice to have you on the show.
Good. They're all very good training partners for me, and I mean, you know, sometimes what happens is bad because my two of my friends are fighting each other, you know, like it's happened last weekend, but it's part of the business.
Yeah, and first off, let me ask you about that, George. What were your thoughts on David and Joey's fight the other night?
You know, for sure, I know David for a long time. He's my, he's a long-time friend. I've been training with Joey, too, not to prepare Joey against David. Joey is a very nice guy. He came in Montreal when I was preparing myself against Matt Hughes. I really like both of the guys. And I mean, it's sad, you know, when I see two of my good friends fighting each other. You know, it's just that it's sad, you know.
Yeah.
But now it won't happen again. I think David is gonna start training with Team Jackson as well. So I think if I'm right, so I think everything's gonna go well.
Interesting.
George, what were your thoughts on that fight in particular? It sounded like from the very beginning, especially the commentators were very down on David. But that didn't look really, to me, unlike any other of David's fights, in that he seemed to be very nonplussed about being taken down and was very competent on the ground and wasn't being damaged very much. Is that something he's just going to have to avoid from now on?
I don't know what was both guys' strategies before the fight. I think the reason why Joey won, it's first he had the best strategy, and he came and he executed his plan. He take away David's strength by using by fighting him. I guess his weaknesses, you know. So I think it's that's why he won the fight. You know, if I would stay standing up in a kickboxing war, I think David might have a slight advantage. But Joey was smart. He put David on the ground, you know, and he take advantage of that weaknesses from David, you know.
Well, George, let's get into your career a little bit. I think the first question most people want to know is how is the knee, and are you going to be ready for the April 7th fight against Matt Serra?
Absolutely. I'm back on training right now, and I can't wait to fight. I had to change some little thing in my training because I never get injured in my career, and I had less than 6 months two bad injuries. So I think it's because after a fight, I always wanted to start the training. You know, I start training too fast, and I'm like out of shape. So it's important to take vacation and take full vacation, and that's what I never did. And it's an accumulation of fatigue, you know. So that's why I think, and that's why my trainer thinks I got injured. You know, it's nobody's fault. It's my fault. So I have to change that thing in my training.
Yeah.
George, have you found it difficult managing your time now? Before, when you're training for Hughes, obviously you're fairly busy, but now that you're the champion, the demands on your time must be huge, far more than before. So how do you manage your time and your travels and your training? Is that a new skill you've had to develop to balance your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more busy. I got more responsibility than I had before. I think it's part of the game. You know, when you're a champion, you represent the sport, and I think it's just a normal thing. And I think to learn how to manage myself well, you know, it's hard to become champion, but it's even harder to stay champion. That's why I really look up to Matt Hughes, the state champion for so many years, you know. So I hope I'm going to be able to do the same thing. And, you know, I will do my best, and I totally believe that I'll be a great champion, and also I will be somebody who's going to give the sport a good image. Is that going to require you buying a farm somewhere in northern Quebec and becoming a recluse?
Sorry, what did you say? I'm sorry.
Is that going to require you buying a farm somewhere in northern Quebec and becoming a recluse?
Oh, my God. But you know what? I have a good manager. He takes care of everything, and he set up my schedule very well.
Well, let me ask you about that. It was announced recently, George, that you're equipped with a new six-fight contract with the UFC, and I'm sure you're happy about that. There were some reports that negotiations were difficult at times. During that whole process, George, did you have any doubt that you'd be back in the UFC armed with a new big-time contract?
I love UFC. UFC, for me, is the best organization in the whole world. They always treat me like a king, and I became somebody in the UFC, and I hope I'm gonna retire in the UFC as well. I don't want to move somewhere else. They have the best fighter in my weight class, and I want to stay there for the rest of my career. You know, and I really like the way they treat me. You know, it's always a pleasure, and I always have fun, you know, dealing with them.
George, do you find it ironic that in most of the MMA rankings, the UFC has probably 8 or 9 out of 10 of the best 170 fighters, and then at 155, they probably only have 1 or 2 in the top 10? How do you explain that?
Well, there were so many good fighters those days there. I don't know why. Maybe like in my division, you know, like I think in my division, all the best fighters are in the UFC, you know. But now what's happened is that you see Mirko Prokop is coming and Quinton Jackson. So I think that the UFC starts to taking over the other organizations, and I think it's very nice because if it's happening, you know, I'm gonna have more challenge, and I'm up to the challenge, you know. And I am sure the fans want to see a good fight. They want to see me have a good challenge, you know?
Well, George, much has been made about your upcoming fight with Matt Serra, and as far as the fact that you have a fairly good relationship with Matt Serra. You've trained with him somewhat, and I know that he speaks kindly of you. Is that going to be tough for you, George? Have you been in the ring before taking on someone that you might consider a friend, or are people exaggerating your relationship with Matt?
Yeah, Matt Serra is not my friend. If it would be my friend, I would never fight a friend.
Okay.
He's a good acquaintance. It's a big difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would never fight a friend. If you ask me one day to fight David Loiseau or fight, Nathan Marquardt or fight Patrick Cota, I would never fight one of them. And even Jonathan Goulet, all those guys, I consider them as a friend. You know, one of them were a friend or like brother, you know. I train with the people who I train. I don't fight them. It's not a question of money. Even if you give me $1 million, it's a question of honor for me, you know. And, you know, honor is more important than everything, and to be faithful is more important than everything for me. And, Matt Serra, I was with him in the reality show. I like the guy. I really like him. He likes me. We had a good, relationship. But he's a good acquaintance, but he's not a friend.
Okay.
That's a big difference. And I would let my punch go on him for sure, because I know he will do the same thing against me.
George, do you don't seem to be the type of fighter who ever has any real animosity towards one of your opponents. So it would seem that being a sportsman, you would be one of the most likely fighters to be able to perform against someone who is a friend of yours or a close associate. Do you notice a difference between those types of fighters, or what kind of fighters actually have to become have some kind of animosity or anger towards their opponents?
You know what? It depends on every people's character. There is two type of fighter. There's, like you said, that the fighter who like to they need to hate their opponent to perform. They need to hate the guy they're fighting against, because otherwise they would not be able to let their punch go. They need to create that kind of animosity. They fight with the anger, they fight with their anger. Me, I don't fight with my anger. I fight with my heart, you know. When I fight, I don't have any emotion. I'm totally mechanic, you know. There is a first type who fight, the fighter who fight with their anger. When they're warming up in their locker room, they prime themselves. They're like, hey, don't forget what he said about you, don't forget what he did to this guy, don't forget this and stuff. That's not me. Either way, I get ready for it. But even if my opponent talk bad about me, I never fight with my emotion. Because I think if you fight with your anger, you can make mistakes, and the opponent will be able to capitalize on you, you know?
Well, let me ask you,
that's why. That's why sometimes you said a guy get in the, on the other guy's head, that's what happened, you know? So me, I don't play that game.
Well, George, I know you don't want to look too far beyond Matt Serra, and of course, possible rematch with Matt Hughes if he can get by Chris Lytle, and I want to ask you about that fight in a minute, but I think a lot of people are curious to know what's your relationship now with Diego Sanchez, of course, one of the top contenders, and you've been doing some training with Team Jackson. Has that been difficult to get to know Diego at all, or have you guys been keeping your training sessions separate?
Yo, me and Diego never trained together.
Okay.
I trained with Nathan Marquardt, Keith Jardine, Joey Villasenor, a couple of guys, you know, Rashad Evan, but I never trained with Diego Sanchez, because, you know, if I start to train with somebody, and, you know, if I become friends with somebody, I'm not going to fight him, you know, so it's very, we both know that we might fight each other one day, if we keep winning our fight, so from now, you know, we might separate a little bit, and maybe in the future we'll start training together, you know.
And what are your thoughts on Diego Sanchez versus Josh Koscheck? Any prediction on that fight, George?
Oh, well, it's going to be a great fight. I mean, it's too bad that I have to fight that night, so I won't be able to watch it live, you know, because yeah. I'm probably going to be warming up in the locker room. But I don't know. I mean, it can go either way. Both guys have got the tools to beat each other. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see. And you can be sure that after my fight with Matt Serra, when I'm going to go back home, I'm going to study tapes of this fight.
Mm-hmm. George, one of the things I wanted to ask you is why you fit so well into Jackson's academy, and everyone that we've talked to, including Vil Senor and including Rashad Evans, including Keith Jardine, are just basically waiting for the time when you and Diego do fight as if it's inevitability to get over it, to fully embrace you into the camp. So why is it? What is it about that camp? Everyone, you know, you can't get a bad word out of those people when you interview them. Is it just that kind of friendly, collegial, you know, relationship that you find so attractive about the camp?
I think in that camp they have like great trainers, like Greg Jackson. He's like the best, or maybe one of the best trainers in MMA, you know, and according to me. And he got so much knowledge, and also you have like so many good qualities of training partner, you know. And I think right now that it's probably one of the best camps, you know, in Albuquerque, because. Also, what's happening is down there, the guys, they support each other. They're all there to help each other. You know, they're not there to take somebody's places, you know, and they don't have any jealousy. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't have any anger against each other. You know, they're like brothers. The guys, they stick together. If somebody lose, the whole crew lose. You know what I'm saying? That's how it is. That's the mentality down there. And that's why I think that, the team Jackson is so strong, you know, and I think that's the reason why I was going to train with them, you know, because I like that kind of mentality, and you know, I really like the people in the camp, and for me it's that's how it is, you know. I have to see beyond like the quality of the training partner. Yes, I have to see the guy's mentality, and that's what I like the most about them.
George, after you beat Matt Hughes, you're very gracious and humble in winning, and you immediately offered Matt Hughes a rematch, and of course he's going to be fighting Chris Lytle on March 3rd, and it sounds like Matt opted to fight someone in between a possible rematch with yourself. What are your thoughts on that fight, George? And do you kind of find that right now some people might be underestimating Chris Lytle's chances a little bit?
Absolutely, and it's the same thing with Matt Serra. People who think that Matt Serra and Chris Lytle are the same old fighter than they was on the, before, they're totally wrong. Chris Lytle is a very dangerous fighter, and he got so much skill. He got a lot better. This guy is a fireman. He never trained full-time before. His job was fireman. He started training full-time after the reality show, you know, and I'm gonna is going to change a lot of things, you know. He's an amazing fighter. I feel privileged, by the way, to be able to train with those guys, Masvidal as well. You know, he's way better than he was before. He's got so much knowledge on the ground. It makes him a very dangerous fighter, you know. And if I don't get ready, and if Matthews take this fight not seriously, it's gonna be a very bad night for him and for me. You know, we have to, if we want to win that fight and fight each other again, we need to train hard and see those guys as the most, as the biggest challenge we ever had. So that's all I set my mind for this fight.
Yeah.
George, who do you think is the best 170 fighter that's fighting right now in the UFC that is sort of dark horse, that isn't one of the that doesn't get a lot of attention? Do you see anyone on the horizon that has the tools to take your belt potentially?
Yeah, right now the most dangerous fighter for me is Matt Serra, and I know some people might laugh when I say that, but I try to set my mind and I try to believe in it. Because I like to, the way I train is always, I'm kind of afraid that my opponent train harder than myself. So that's how I train. And according to me, the most dangerous fighter right now is Matt Serra.
George, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I wanted to hear your thoughts. Congratulations are in order. You were named the Full Contact Fighter of the Year for 2006, as well as the Full Contact Fighter Canadian Fighter of the Year, which was voted on by your peers in Canada. Were you aware of that, George? And what are your thoughts to receive a pretty prestigious award?
that's great. The sport gets more popular in Canada. Actually, I'm, like I said to all the other reporters, I'm way more popular in the United States and outside of Quebec, you know, because Quebec is French. So in Canada, you know, that where I am in my you know, hometown, like in Quebec, you know. I think it's because, you know, a lot of people start looking at UFC, and I mean, it's because it's in English, you know. So, but it's all good. I like the way that's how it is, because, you know, where I'm from, I can have my peaceful life, and I can do pretty much whatever I want.
Yeah.
Well, that really concerns me, because my wife is a big fan of yours. So I hate to think that you could do whatever you want in Canada. As a matter of fact, you're one of the only fighters that she will actually watch in MMA.
That should be more of an honor, George, than winning Full Contact Fighter of the Year, because Brenda's wife is a very lovely woman.
Thank you very much. That's awesome. Oh, yeah, I have hard time to hear you. The connection is...
okay. George, before we let you go, I know you're going to be in New York coming up, apparently. You want to tell us a little bit about that? You're going to be doing some promotional stuff in New York, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing some promotional stuff in New York, and I'm going to be able to train maybe a little bit over there. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's my sponsorship guy will take care of all my schedule, and I don't exactly know where I'm going exactly. I think I have some radio interview, and like I go to GNC store to promote, you know, product of my sponsor is Biotest, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going there to promote some of the product that my sponsor sell, you know.
Right.
George, are you actually going to go train with Henzo before this fight, or are you going to avoid?
I won't train with at the Henzo Grace Academy, because Matsuro is a. It's part of the team, you know. He's been in that team way before me, so for the respect of him and Hanzo, you know, I respect that, and I won't be training there. I will start training back there after the fight, you know. But for now, I'm just gonna train maybe in Muay Thai with my teacher, with one of my teacher in Muay Thai. It's a field nurse at the Watt Academy in New York, Manhattan.
One last quick question before we let you go, George. I know you're an extremely busy man. You've done some training with Henzo Gracie. Did you get a chance to see his fight with Frank Shamrock? And if so, what were your thoughts on the controversial end to that fight?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the fight, and, you know, I mean, it's bad. I think I'm not agree with what Frank Shamrock said. I was kind of pissed off a little bit, you know, because I know Henzo, mm-hmm. I don't know nobody in the sport who got a bigger heart than Hanzo. You know, this guy got his arm broke against Kazushi Sakuraba and he never passed. So yeah, I know he got hurt for real, and I think it was very disrespectful from Frank Shamrock that saying that you know, Hanzo wasn't there to fight. I mean, you know, for sure I like Hanzo. You know, he's like the head teacher at the academy. You know, I mean, it was bad. You know, I had like I felt bad. You know.
Yeah. Well, watching it, I mean, was it your sense that it kind of seems now there's two versions? Frank Shamrock maintains that Hanzo Gracie was tiring and that it was only a matter of time until he stopped Hanzo. And then, of course, Hanzo made some comments saying that he was surprised at how easily he took Frank down, that he was able to dominate him on the ground. If that had not happened, George, what was your sense of where the fight would have ended? Would Hanzo have gone on to win, or do you think Frank would have gone on to win?
I think this fight, I'm not sure, I think this fight was a five or a three round. I don't know.
Three
but
rounds.
Anyway, I mean, I'm very confident that Hanzo would be able to win, you know, and, we can't tell because, you know, a fight is a fight. You never know what's going to happen, but I truly believe in Hanzo's chance.
Yeah. Well, George, we appreciate you coming on the program. Best of luck on April 7th, and it's good news to hear that your knee's in coming along fine. Thanks again for coming on the show, George.
All right, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks
a lot,
George. Okay, take care.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Full Contact Fighter.
The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is The Machine, Mark Hominick, who is coming off a disappointing and controversial majority decision loss to Hatsu Hioki this weekend at TKO 28. And Mark and I were talking a little bit off-air, and he reminded me that people are going to be able to watch the fights this weekend on Viewer's Choice pay-per-view. The TKO is going to be shown this Friday.
For sure.
Now, Mark, like I said to you earlier, I haven't seen the fight. I've just read a sort of variety of different reports or different threads on various forums, etc. What was your thought on the fight? I've had some people saying that Hatsu won the first couple rounds, you won the last three. Some people saying that you know, Hatsu won more of the rounds. Some people saying you. It seems like there's a lot of different opinions, Mark. What's your sense, and what are people saying to you?
Well, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, I lost the first round, definitely. Second round was pretty close, and I'm pretty sure I dominated the last three rounds, even scoring maybe a 10-8 in the third and fifth round. So, you know, and I've got the same kind of feedback from everyone I've talked to, from press people to people in the sport to just fans that were there and their own opinions. So, you know, that's what happens when, you know, when it goes to a judge's decision. It's just, it was a pretty big fight and title fight, and lot on the line, so that's why it's, you know, stirring up so much noise.
And where are you guys going from here? Like, I've read that Team Tompkins is going to be launching an official appeal with the Athletic Commission to look into this.
We just got that going today. We talked to the Athletic Commission this morning, and we're just in the midst of going through the appeal process. So we're just in the, like, you know, forefront, like, just starting right now. Mm-hmm. With the appeal, so there's no feedback as of yet. I would imagine even by the end of the day or the end of the week, we'll know a lot more. So I'll be able to give you the feedback. But right now, it's just in the midst, so kind of in the infant stages of the appeal.
Now, do you know anything about any more specifics about how they go about the process of evaluating the scoring?
No, like I've never done anything like this before. You know, it's not really my, you know, I don't like doing that in the first place. But I think, you know, it needs to be done because I really truly believe that I won the fight and deserved the title.
And is this, do you think there could have been a mistake as far as just tabulating the scores or just as far as scoring criteria?
You know, I don't know. I just don't know what fight they were watching. And if you go through any of the judging criteria in a fight, I think I clearly won the fight. So whether it's either the judges not knowing what the criteria was or if they were just looking at, you know, if they saw something that everybody else didn't see. But if you look at, you know, effective grappling, I blocked every one of his takedowns, and I swept him to the mat twice. So, you know, I clearly won the takedowns and takedown defense. Aggression, like ring aggression, generalship, I was dictating where the fight went, and I pushed the pace on him, landing far more power shots. The only kind of strong shots he was landing were, like, inside leg kicks, which really did no damage. I was blocking most of them anyways, and, you know, I just thought I pushed the pace a lot and finished the fight strong.
How many times did he try taking you down? It sounds like he just tried a couple times.
He tried about four times.
Okay.
And every time I stopped his takedown, he had to kind of pick himself off the mat.
So the fight was never on the ground at any point?
No. Well, I swept him twice, and I put him right on his back twice. So, the takedown aspect of the game, I won.
And were you surprised? Like, some of the reports I read was saying that it looked as if Hatsu had improved his stand-up game.
Well, for sure, yeah. He definitely gained I give him props. Like, he stood up the whole time and, you know, traded punches with me, and he took a lot of hard shots. I landed a lot of hard hooks and overhands, like power shots, not like jab and cross. Like, he was just landing a long jab because he did have, you know, he has long reach, and he used that in the fight. But, you know, he wasn't really doing any damage with him. With the jab, like, you know, as opposed to taking a right hand, there's a big difference. But, yeah, his stand-up has definitely improved.
And as I said,
a lot of heart for standing there.
I've just read a few reports, and it seems like some of them mention, and maybe they're wrong, or maybe you can give us your insights into this. Was that Hatsu, from some reports I read, might have been throwing more punches or being more active, but these same reports said that perhaps you were landing more and landing more decisive shots.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. Like, I'll have to watch the fight again. I don't think he was, you know, if he was missing a lot of punches, I know that. You know, dodging a lot of the fight, and you know, fans will get to see that when it's shown Friday, and they'll get to make their own opinion. But you know, I he wasn't really doing any damage. I don't remember one shot that, you know, hit me, and I had to step back or kind of, you know, I saw stars or anything like that. But like, I landed a lot of hard shots that made him step back, kind of have to take a breath, and then come back into exchange. I'm really listening to the judges' scorecards when the judges were, you know, saying he won, because I clearly thought I'd won the fight until one of the judges said 47-47. That kind of made me kind of like, it almost knocked me on my feet. I was just like, whoa, someone thought that was a draw, let alone giving him the fight. Like, it was just, I was blown away. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't even cross my mind that I lost the fight. I thought I, you know, finished the fight a lot stronger and, you know, like I said, won the fight.
So where do you go from here, Mark? You know, obviously, if in your heart you felt you won the fight, then I guess something like this wouldn't be confidence draining. You've trained very hard for this fight. You've looked forward to it. We've had you on the show, and you've talked about it now for quite some time.
Yeah.
So what's your outlook after this, Mark? I mean, is it still very positive as far as the fact that you believe in your heart that you won the fight?
Oh,
and you're ready to move on?
You know, when it all comes down to it, we put on one hell of a fight. So, you know, the fans left disappointed because I left, you know, without a title, and they thought I was robbed, but they got one hell of a fight. We went 5 rounds of 5 minutes going at each other. We both were banged up, and we both, you know, threw a lot of punches and, you know, put on a great fight, so I'm happy about that, and I know, you know, the fans would like, you know, want me back, and, you know, other organizations and promoters will see that fight, and, like, you know, they'd want either one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not concerned about, you know, having to, you know, sit and dwell on this forever. Like, I'm ready to get back training and fight. Like, I'm going back to start training tomorrow.
I mean, obviously, the word rematch comes up right now.
Like, it definitely, you know, needs to be done because,
yeah,
you know, that was one hell of a fight. The fans would definitely want to see it again.
And we've talked about Hatsu Hioki before, the fact that the first time you fought him, he was somewhat of an unknown commodity in North America, but very well known in Japan. I guess for him now, and his appearance in Pride, etc., this probably only further entrenches for people who have followed your career that Hioki, regardless of the outcome of this last fight, is definitely a world-class 145-pound fighter.
He's a top five. He's a top five 145. He's very well-rounded. You know, he stood up with me for five rounds and didn't get knocked out, and he's got a good ground game, too. So, you know, the future's bright for both of us. We're young, we're, you know, exciting fighters, and I think, you know, whatever way this decision goes, I think we're both going to be fine and keep fighting. And definitely, I think the fans deserve another fight, for sure.
Yeah, in the upcoming issue of Full Contact Fighter, I worked on a story basically talking about the 145-pound division. There's some comments from yourself in there, as well as Jeff Curran and some other 145-pound fighters.
Yep.
And just to the effect that, you know, maybe it's time for perhaps the IFL or the UFC to take a serious look at introducing a 145-pound division.
Oh, no question, no question. Like, you know, in TKO, like the 145 division, kind of being, you know, cost or anything like that, because of, you know, the career there, like, we've built up that division, and we sold out the Bell Center at a 145 main event. You know, there's, you know, 10 to 12,000 people at the Bell Center, biggest show ever in Canada, and to see, you know, two 145ers go at it. And, you know, once people start seeing that, you know, other organizations like UFC, and realize, you know, the athleticism and, you know, the speed and agility and power of these fighters, they're going to want it. It's a very exciting division, and there's a lot of top guys. You know, I think, you know, there's three that really stand out, and those are the fighters that are going to have to go at it this year to prove their division worthy of it.
Well, and it just seems like, I mean, they're doing more events every year. The IFL is doing a ton more events.
They're definitely going to need the division and show that, you know, the lighter fighters are just exciting and put on a great show.
Well, and I think the concern by some people is that some of these promotions seem to be, well, not all of them, but there's some that are talking about introducing the super heavyweight division, 265 plus, and then the 145-pound division somewhat disappears from the discussion in some of these organizations. And I think if you look at the depth of fighters, as far as how many more fighters you could bring to the table at 145, there's just no comparison.
Yeah, like, because, like, in the thing with the 145 division, like, someone in the top 10, I think, any night, you know, could get either way between any of the top 10 guys. Like, that's how, you know, well-rounded these fighters are, athletic. You know, the heavy division, you can get a pretty boring fight. You know, it happens. With 145 division, you know, the guys are coming in shape, ready to go, and they always slow down. Like, if you look at boxing, the 147 division to 154 has been what's saving, you know, what, boxing's starting to die off anyways, but it has saved boxing the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's just a matter of time, and this division will get introduced.
Well, and the UFC now sort of by ipso facto promotes a 145 division because of its acquiring the WEC. And, of course, Uriah Faber just won that championship, his third.
For sure.
What do you think the impact of someone like Uriah Faber, as far as being working, in a sense, for the UFC, working with them, do you think that might have an impact as far as he's someone
definitely. Yeah, like Uriah is definitely, you know, like, he's one of those top three that I'm talking about. And he puts his ass on the line every fight, and I got a lot of respect from him, and I see us, you know, fighting down the road, maybe even this year, because that's a fight I think fans would love to see. And, you know, it's a matter of just proving ourselves, and, you know, once people see that, they're going to want to see more.
And as well, just over in Japan, I mean, this is a division that, and the smaller fighters have been promoted there for pretty much
for
since
sure.
the inception, and there's a lot of great talent over in Japan, as well as Hatsu Hioki, obviously, but there's plenty of guys that could come over and
yep,
give any of the North Americans a run for their money.
Definitely.
And as well, there's another fellow Canadian, Antonio Carvello. He's going to be contributing some work for FCF, and he actually recently moved to Japan. He's training with Hiroki Abe in Japan.
Yep.
He's another top Canadian that maybe people don't, in North America, don't discuss that much.
Antonio hasn't really got too much respect, you know, or, you know, in the limelight, I guess, but, you know, he's just gotta get that, you know, one or two fights to get his name out there and really prove himself. Because sometimes, you know, if the division's not shown on TV or pay-per-view or talks, you know, not that much press about it, you know, you kind of get lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've had the opportunity to fight in UFC, so my name's kind of been out there, which has been great, and I think it's just gonna help this division, you know, just having, you know, names like myself and Uriah and I've mentioned, but just like all, you know, guys that have been on the big shows, and just proving this 145 division worthy.
There's some other controversy surrounding Team Tompkins as far as decisions go, and it was Chris Ordesky versus Bart Palowski. Recently, Chris was given the split decision victory. Did you get a chance to see that fight, Mark?
No, I haven't got a chance to see. I was training, it was a week out from my fight, so I was pretty, serious into training and getting ready to go. But I haven't got a chance to watch, but I heard it was a war. And I was down training at Jeff Kearns, from before Bart left, so I didn't really want to give too much input onto that fight because they're both my friends, but I heard it was a war.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to when we can see it on Sportsnet up here in Canada.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, those two are, the ISL's Golden Boys in the 155 division, and I heard they put it on the line. So, but, that's what happens, just like, with my fight, anytime it goes to decision, you run that risk.
Right. And another guy, a big name Team Tompkins fighter who had a successful night at TKO 28, Sam Stout, defended his lightweight title.
He really proved himself that, his ground game improved tremendously. He went to the ground with a Brazilian top team black belt, survived two rounds and ended up stopping him. So, I think that just lays the rest, that fight with Kenny Florian. That Sam doesn't have a ground game, and Sam has got great defense, get back to his feet. He's got pretty good submission skills as well, because, last fight was a submission win over Dre Estrada, so I was glad to see Sammy prove that once again.
Well, and you guys are renowned for your conditioning. Was there kind of a bit of surprise around your camp when Fabio, it was obviously he couldn't go on, that he had maybe prepared to...
Yeah, the first two rounds were the rounds we had to worry about, and after that it was Sammy's fight, and that's exactly what happened. He just ran out of gas. When you're shooting in, you're trying, and you start getting that takedown denied, it just takes your self-esteem, it takes everything away from you, and that's exactly what happened. And Sammy just, showed his conditioning, his heart, and that's what won the fight.
Before I let you go, Mark, I just wanted to ask you, while we're talking about 145-pound fighters, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on some of the smaller fighters. Some big-name fights coming up, of course, yours against Aoki was catching a lot of press, and
sure.
You've got Gomi versus Nick Diaz coming up. Thoughts on that, Mark?
I think that could be the fight of the year. Diaz is one of my favorite fighters just because he brings it every show. And Gomi, you don't have to say anything about that guy. He's phenomenal. And that, everyone on our team is so excited to watch that fight, as well as with Dan. We're going down to support Dan against Vanderlei. And, I think that's going to be the fight of the year. And that's a great fight for Pride to come over with, to showcase Gomi. And to have, Diaz to fight him is just perfect opponent.
And then Mac Danzig, a longtime king of the cage,
sure,
heavyweight champion, fighting Sakurai.
As well as Sakurai.
Yeah. It's a big break for him. He's wanted to fight Pride for a while.
He's worked his way up, and it's finally his opportunity to get to the big show.
And last question for you. Have you seen Manny Tapia fight at all? I know he fights at 135, but have you seen Manny Tapia undefeated in King of the Cage?
I really just heard about it. I haven't seen too many of his fights, and, that's another name I'm sure I'll be seeing down the road.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be fighting Ryan Diaz, who you've had two great wars with, I think March 10th for the King of the Cage World. I believe they call it featherweight, or maybe flyweight, 135-pound title.
And we'll see. If he beats Ryan, then definitely he's going to be on the radar as well.
Yeah. I think Ryan, perhaps, maybe for fans in the States who aren't familiar with Ryan Diaz, and look at Manny Tapia and the fact that he's undefeated. Even Manny Tapia, talking to him, says that Ryan is probably going to be his toughest test to date.
Definitely. And, Ryan's a game opponent, and, Tapia better bring his A game against him.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know right now I'm not sure your mindset as far as how much you want to talk to the media about this weekend's got to be disappointing for you.
Right now, I just haven't settled down from the fight. The fight's still going on. So hopefully we can get this straightened out and, either a rematch or, see what happens with the decision.
Yeah, and again, we'll mention one more time, it is available on pay-per-view this weekend, at least
Friday
up here
night.
In Canada. I'm not sure about it in the States, but up here in Canada for people who want to check it out.
Definitely.
Mark, thanks for coming on the show, and we wish you best of luck in the future.
Okay, thanks for all the support.
Okay, take care.
The world's only mixed martial arts league, the International Fight League, brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. Don't miss the excitement of the International Bike League in its 2007 inaugural season.
Friday, February 23rd at the Arena at Gwinnett Center.
Find out which team will reign supreme when Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack.
And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Enzo Gracie's Pitbull.
Get your tickets at the Gwinnett Center box office at Ticketmaster.com or by calling Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. As the first mixed martial arts league of its kind, the IFL is primed to change the face of the sport forever. Be a part of it all.
Friday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Arena at Gwinnett Center.
Get your tickets now at the Gwinnett Center box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at
404-249-6400.
The International Fight League. Pure sport. Start subject to change.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, some interesting comments from both George St. Pierre and Mark Hominick. George, it sounds like he's got his priorities straight as far as a lot of people are discussing to the fact in great deal about his relationship with Matt Serra, and it seemed like George sort of cleared up any of those issues. He respects Matt Serra, considers him a nice guy, but doesn't sound like he's going to have any difficulties preparing and fighting Serra. He doesn't necessarily consider him a close friend.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, there's a lot of, and I think it's going to become more and more. That's going to become more and more an issue because you see these great fighters coming out of these great camps, and people are going to start having to suck it up. And Dana White already hinted at it when Rashad when he was talking to Rashad at the press conference, and Dana basically came out and said, if I make the fight of it, Rashad and Jardine, you're going to fight it. Mm-hmm. Rashad said, no, we're not. So that was it.
And we've discussed this in the past. It is going to become more and more difficult with fighters doing so much cross-training now, different camps, etc. I mean, you have to wonder if it's going to get to the point where it's just fighters might have to accept the fact that they're going to have to compete against guys that they might have considered friends.
Well, I kind of wanted George to expand on that a little bit, and it seems, you know, if this is truly a sport, it seems you should be able to compete against someone, even though it is a pugilistic contest. You're not out there to hurt the person, and you both know what you're getting into. So, you know, you should be able to fight your friends. It might be tough if you actually train together, but you know, it's something that I think you have to come to expect.
Mm-hmm. And there's some interesting fights been announced for that card, UFC 69. We talked with George about Diego Sanchez versus Josh Koscheck. And there's been some other announcements. Marcus Davis fighting Pete Spratt. Talis Laddie's fighting Pete Sell. Interesting matchups. Alan Belcher is going to be fighting Kendall Groves on that card as well, which is going to be a great middleweight fight. So that card's shaping up nicely, and it sounds like Mike Swick, still haven't confirmed it. I know there's been a lot of speculation he'll fight Yushin Okami. But for sure, the UFC has said that Mike Swick and Heath Herring will both compete on that card. So I thought that was kind of an interesting announcement with Heath Herring, because I'm wondering about the extent of his knee injury that supposedly he had talked about with Joe Rogan, etc., that he had had a knee injury. But
and that card is coming up right away, is it not?
April 7th. So I guess he still has some time.
Well, that's an interesting revelation about the knee hypothesis. So we'll see.
I guess it depends. It depends on the extent of the knee injury, when he injured it before his last fight against O'Brien. I guess no better person other than Heath Herring to ask, and we'll see if actually he can prepare and get ready in time for this upcoming card, because there's not a lot of time in between, but. And, of course, the big news this weekend, Brendan, we alluded to it in the intro, and I wanted to discuss with you the Elite XC its debut, the premier event. And Brendan, in my opinion, I can't think of a worst case scenario to unfold as it did in the main event for the first time, you know, card on Showtime. It just can't be good. I can't really see how you can shape that into anything very terribly positive for the sport.
I disagree. I don't think it's the worst case scenario. I think the worst case scenario would have been Frank Shamrock Caesar Gracie ending to that. You know, where your main card is completely anticlimactic, and at least now there's some controversy that's swirling, some irresolved issues. There's always the possibility of a rematch. But I don't think it's as bad as people have made it out to be. It wasn't the greatest, that's for sure.
I think part of the reason I think it was really, really bad, and I understand that, yes, for sure, for MMA fans, there's going to be lots of hype, and even for perhaps people that never watched MMA before in their lives, they might want to tune in again because of the drama that's unfolding. But the reason I say, and maybe perhaps worst-case scenario is too strong a way of phrasing it, but the reason I think it was really, really bad is you've got, you know, Frank Shamrock afterwards, after the fight, pretty much discussing the fact, you know, how he doesn't know the new rules and insinuating that back in the day, you know, he wants to sort of see a return to those days. And I think that's something where the MMA is trying to distance themselves from that. And anyone new to the sport and tuning in for the first time, you see a fight stopped due to disqualification, due to illegal blows to the head, and then you've got a fighter insinuating that, Enzo Gracie, you have Frank Shamrock insinuating Enzo Gracie wasn't truly hurt. And I mean, come on, man. It wasn't exactly a great fight to deliver as this new MMA product.
Yeah, I think I like the card. I thought the fights were fairly decent, but the big mistake of the show was the location. Mm-hmm. And I think every fight was booed, and it's just completely inappropriate times. And it really reminded me of the dark days of the UFC, you know, where they would put on shows in rural Louisiana and places like that. Just, yeah, I guess you can't really avoid that because we even saw that in the last UFC in Vegas.
Yeah.
But you know, that just makes for really bad, television, I think.
Well, and it was interesting too, Charles Bennett, I think for people who follow his career and know Charles Bennett beforehand, it might have been entertaining for some of us, and that was a very entertaining fight. But you also have to wonder as well afterwards, if you're trying to sell MMA as a new sort of professional sport, try to distance itself from some of the shenanigans that went on years ago. I think the Bennett after fight antics counterproductive.
Actually, I think that Crazy Horse is kind of an unwashed rampage. Like I think he has the same potential, and it's interesting to hear that Rampage was there to see him or something like that. I think they mentioned something about that, but you know, he could take a lot of tips from Rampage, and he comes off and he still has that Rampage has that edge, and you know, he has a history. He's kind of like Ice-T in that regard, you know. And someone said to Ice-T earlier on in his career, Ice-T, one of the things, you can make a lot of money because white people really like you. And I think Rampage is exactly like that, and I think Bennett could be like that. But there's still mystery about Bennett in that, you know, he makes a lot of really imprudent decisions, you know, if he wants to be an actor or be a successful fighter. He makes a lot of poor decisions, so... You know, I think if he just made some wiser decisions, he is a really marketable talent. And I think someone recognizes that about him, but you know, he's got to kind of go along with the game, right?
Well, and I just think sort of letting him run loose in that post fight interview. Like I said, I mean, I was entertained, followed his career, and we're all well familiar with Charles Bennett. And like I said, he deserves credit for the very impressive win. But in saying that, I just think that for new viewers to the sport, it might not have exactly been the kind of polished interview that we'd kind of like to have seen. For me, I mean, and I think for most people, the Gino Carano, Julia Ketsi fight, that definitely, I think, would go a long ways to furthering the sport of MMA. Great sportsmanship shown between both of them. A very entertaining fight, of course, and I thought that might have been one of the highlights of the night.
No, I think, like I said on the show before, I think females have a lot to contribute to the sport, and that was a great example. It wasn't even the best fight, but it was very entertaining. And you know, some of the fights, some of the female fighters that I've seen have actually put on far technically superior showings to that one. But I think they've identified, you know, some obvious selling points to both those fighters, and I enjoyed that show. And you know, some people say it was the fight of the night. I wouldn't go that far. I think probably the Bennett fight was more interesting to me, as was his freaking backflip off the top ropes, which is, no one's given him enough credit. That's pretty phenomenal.
That's phenomenal.
You know, I think 99 times out of 100, I wouldn't land that bad boy, and I'd probably be in critical care after. So
I'd have to say 100% of the time.
It's just a testament to his athleticism that people sort of like,
I'd have to say that 99 out of 100 times you wouldn't be able to scale that fence.
99 out of 100 times I wouldn't even be up in the top exactly. So,
but I mean, if you want to talk about marketability, when we're on that thread, I mean, if you look no further than Gina Carano, I mean, obviously very well spoken, beautiful. She's gonna probably have a big future in front of her, I would think, too, endorsement wise, etc.
Yeah, well, it looks like she's on the way right now. You know, she's got all the big MMA endorsements in place, Science and Sprawl, and it'll be interesting to see how they market her. And she did look, you know, I think one of the, to her credit, even though her ground didn't look that technical, she survived down there, and her stand up looked very good. But she has what, you know, a lot of male fighters don't have, and that's the ability to finish a fight, and then or have the willingness and understanding of what she needs to do to finish a fight. Like, she was literally, doing the stalking in the late second and third rounds. And if anything, I think she fought maybe a little bit conservatively, but I think she demonstrated she had the wherewithal to, you know, to pursue her opponent and attempt to put her away. And that's what's going to put her over the top, I think.
Well, and I want to discuss a little bit further the main event. We sort of got sidetracked there, even though these are all points that I want to discuss as well. But, Brendan, I mean, what are your thoughts? You've been around this game for a long time, followed the sport intently for years and years and years. What were your thoughts on that? I mean, Enzo Gracie, you followed his career. We all know his accomplishments. What were your thoughts? Legit, I mean, did you agree with anything Frank Shamrock had to say afterwards?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit torn about the fight because, you know, I think they were in there to do different things. You know, Enzo is now an ambassador of the sport. I think he's fighting now to make money and to show that he's still got some chops. But Enzo, you know, Enzo's career is on the downside. He could fight for another year or two or whatever. But you know, I think people had looked to Shamrock because he had a name, and Shamrock looked to himself because he had a name to continue to do something and to become a contender again. And so, in a sense, they had different agendas in the fight. And I was actually surprised at the ease that Shamrock got taken down. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that was part of his game plan or he was really wanted to see to be nonplussed about that. But his wrestling was his wrestling was terrible, and he ended up in a position where that made him look bad. And I think because Shamrock has very cleverly worked his way into a number of very, very well-paying gigs, basically on reputation alone, you know, he's basically making probably as much or more than any other 185-pound MMA fighter in the world. You know, he's got a lot to lose by having a bad showing or by being embarrassed by someone, you know, like Enzo. And I think he thought he could go out there and take out Enzo on his feet, and it didn't really turn out that way. And, you know, I think he kind of looked embarrassed. The question about not knowing the rules, that was just, you know, that's just foolish. And I think a lot of the things he said after the fight were foolish as well. When you end a fight through stupidity on your own behalf.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't come out and criticize the person. Come out and criticize your opponent.
Well, I just think that, you know, regardless if he's trying to hype a rematch, and I can understand to an extent that he thought the fight wasn't going his way. Of course, he's claimed that the fight was going his way, that he knew that he thinks that Enzo was tired and that he was going to knock him out. And I understand to an extent trying to hype the fight, and Frank's very good at that. But I would take issue with the fact if he truly, genuinely believes that Enzo was completely faking as a way out, if he truly believes on his heart, I'd have to take cause with that. I don't see that. I think if you look at Hensel Gracie and his career, there's really nothing to give evidence to that fact. And if anything, if I could be critical of Hensel's performance, was the fact that he just seemed like he was almost playing it too nice. I mean, there's a couple times he took him to the ground and he wasn't really working too many shots. He had side mount a few different times.
But that's Hensel as a fighter. Like, look at his fight with, look at his fight with BJ Penn a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. I think that went to a draw. And Hensel is a fighter that I think to some extent with guys like that, he is just willing to go in there and ride it out. And that's the worst thing that Shamrock could have done. And who the hell gets stood up in a fight, in side mount?
Yeah.
How lazy do you have to be to get stood up when you have someone side mount? So, I'm not saying lazy in a bad way, but he was not making any progress. He wasn't mm-hmm. intending to finish the fight. So I think. Frank had to have known that if he game planned at all, and he had to want to, that's the only thing that really he had to avoid with Hensel, was Hensel just trying to ride him out for a win. And I'm sure maybe he didn't think that he could be taken down, or I don't know what, but he just didn't play the game right.
And that's what I'm saying, is he should be, if anything, he should sort of look at the tape and realize that if Hensel had been at all any more aggressive in those dominant positions, I think things could have been drastically different. And for whatever reason, if Hensel, I don't know if he was trying to wait to serve for a submission or what, but, and so let me ask you this, Brennan, having seen Frank Shamrock in this condition against Hensel Gracie, does this change your outlook on how you would have predicted the upcoming Baroni-Shamrock fight?
I think his stand-up looked pretty good. So if he and Baroni stand there and go toe-to-toe, they're fairly evenly matched, because Frank, his stand-up looked okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think he should have clinched up with Hensel. I don't think there's anything that Baroni is going to do much differently, but who knows? That's what we need to know about Frank, and that's the make it or break it fight for Frank, because if he loses to Baroni, then the big paydays are over for him, and he's done, right? And a lot of fighters, fighters like Hoyce Gracie put their name and reputation on the line in these last couple of years in fights like that, and now, their reputations have been slightly sullied as active fighters. Mm-hmm. Certain fighters, with reputations have chosen not to do that, and still can cash in and ride those out. So it's not inconceivable that Frank is still a contender, but I'm really beginning to, after seeing him fight with Hensel, I don't think he is. I think the fact that he looked like he had a lot of ring rust, I don't think he can step in and fulfill his reputation, or the reputation that he thought he brought to, these big promoters.
Well, I mean, this much can be said clearly with Baroni then. I mean, there's no doubt that Frank Shamrock has the ability to submit Baroni. I mean, Shamrock has a great, is well known for submission skills, but this much should be said. I mean, even if they're even on their feet, if you just go on what he showed against Hensel, then you would think that Baroni, if the option presented itself, would probably, we should be able to take Frank to the mat quite easily based on this performance against Hensel. Now, whether or not there's a different kind of game plan and he's not looking for it as much, perhaps that might change that kind of situation. But really, for me, what I guess I'm trying to ultimately say is, for sure, I definitely think that the Baroni-Shamrock fight is going to be extremely competitive going on this last weekend's performance.
Yeah, I think what we saw in a couple of different fighters, and it's unfortunate that people who are unfamiliar with MMA would see two fighters like this, but Loazzo and Shamrock being, putting themselves in the position where they were either incapable of defending a takedown, or seeming unwilling to do so, or were just so nonplussed about the whole thing that they didn't care one way or the other. And Loazzo has always had that attitude. And to some extent, it's justified, because even when Villasenor did take him down, and had him mounted in at one time in side control for most, didn't do anything to actually hurt Loazzo. So, you know, he's got skill on the ground, but that's just not a proper strategy anymore on Loaiza's behalf. And I felt really uncomfortable watching that fight because it looked like it was going to unfold the same way that everything else, all those other fights, his last three fights have.
Yeah.
And it did this way, you know.
Well, you obviously can see some shared game plans here. That this would mean that with Vila Senor, that was the third time in a row now where Loaiza's opponents, when the opportunity to take his back presented itself. They all didn't want to for fear of him reversing and winding up on top and utilizing elbows. And it will be interesting to see where David Loaiza goes from here. I know you and I talked about this off air. You didn't seem to mind his performance so much, and I thought that it going on what happened against Mike Swick, and even with Rich Franklin, where at times he didn't engage, but he deserves a lot of credit for sticking in there with Rich Franklin. But especially going off what happened with Mike Swick, I thought that Loaiza would engage Vila Senor much, much earlier, and once again, it was caught up in the same predicament.
Well, I think he tried. Loaiza's big problem is that he, for all the talk about his elbows, he is not threatening in the clinch. So guys like Vila Senor, who are great wrestlers, can clinch him up, and once they have the clinch, it's a slippery slope because they get the takedown and that counts for something, and lying on your back and weaseling out of precarious positions doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I think that if anything, Loaiza has to have a way more aggressive clinch. He doesn't utilize Muay Thai. He doesn't move his opponent in the clinch. So once you see him with his back on the cage, he can rest there for a minute in the same position. That's just an invitation to take him down. And that's the thing he's got to avoid. He's got to have a way more aggressive. He's got to have a way more aggressive clinch if he doesn't want to pay more attention to his wrestling and just not clinching up. So it's frustrating because he's got a lot of potential, and he has glimmers of excellence. But I don't think his game plans. He went and trained with he changed teams to train, and his game plan didn't seem to change at all. So maybe we should have him on the show and ask him about it.
Yeah. One last note I want to mention before we get out of here. Bodog Fights, new season in St. Petersburg, season 2, debuts tonight. For some listeners, they might be listening to this after the fact, but it debuts tonight, I believe, on the ION Network in the United States and the Fight Network in Canada, 8 p.m. Pacific in Canada, 11 o'clock Eastern, I believe, for tonight. So people get to see the fights unfold week to week, which is really great for us. If you don't like watching it on the Internet like most people had to do last year, for the first season of Bodog, it's nice, Brendan, that we can watch the fights and be treated to some Bodog fight action.
And bravo to the Fight Network. They've really done well by us here in Canada. So we had we got to see the Elite XE fight live. Well, I didn't, but people did. Now we get to see the Bodog show as well. So that's great. And the fights tonight are incomparable. This is probably going to be the, by the looks of the card, this is going to be the best night. You've got Eve Edwards fighting tonight, and also Black Mambo.
Coulter Gill, yeah.
My new favorite fighter.
Black Mambo. Edwards, Mike Brown, that's going to be great. And now who Coulter Gill's fighting escapes me. But it should be two great lightweight fights for tonight. Well, Brendan, on that note, let's get out of here. You enjoy your return to your beautiful city of Edmonton, and we'll talk to you later in the week.
All right, Kel. Take it easy.